On this episode of My Adventure in Space and Time.
You watch something, a sprawling month-long journey, like yeah, months-long journey.
It's a hell of a ride, isn't it?
This is what happens when we don't have the visual. Did you think it sounded quite suggestive?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to My Adventure in Space and Time, a modern Whovian's journey through classic Who. I'm Shona, I'm that Whovian, and I am here once again with Caroline. Hello.
Hey, hello. We're back.
We're back for real this time.
For real, doing actual episodes and not just trying to get our head around things.
Yeah, not just rambling quite frantically about all the exciting things that are happening. Mm-hmm. So it may not be clear. There is method to our madness. We are doing Marco Polo today, which if you are for some reason an avid My Adventure in Space and Time listener, you might be like, hey girls, weren't you on series 3? You did series 1, you did series 2, aren't you going to do series 3 now? Well, the thing is, series 3 has a lot of missing episodes. I think it's like mostly missing episodes. And we had already skipped them. I believe we kind of skipped them in the first go. Well, I guess speaking for myself, I think it was just like, I didn't want to lose any momentum. You know, we were doing the podcast for the first time and they were very easy to watch them on BritBox and yeah, didn't really know where to find them, didn't know how to tackle the missing episodes. Eventually came to the conclusion of, screw it, we'll skip them and we'll come back to them. And now seems like a good time because season 3 has so many. So we were just like, hey, why don't we go back, get them done, and then we'll carry on. So we're going back to the first missing episode of series 1, Marco Polo. Remind me, Marco Polo comes in where?
I want to see the fourth story, but I might be full of shit.
Yes, it is. It's well done. She's got it. Preceded by The Edge of Destruction, followed by The Keys of Marinus. So early days, really. I will go into the plot and everything, but the first thing I wanted to ask you, Caroline, how did you find watching a missing episode? Now, for the listener, I know there's different ways people approach this. I know some people want to read the Target novels. Actually, now I think about it, I can't think of that many ways you can do this apart from reading the Target novels or what we did, which was watch the Loose Cannon adaptation, which has just the stills from production and the audio that still exists. How did you find this, watching a Doctor Who episode this way?
Do you know, from what I'd gathered about them, I guess with it saying, you know, it was just done from the still images, I definitely thought it was going to be a bit drier than it was.
Mm.
They've done quite a good job of sort of patching the images together that there's enough kind of movement. Not movement, I mean, there's still images, but there's enough kind of switching between images to still kind of keep you interested and still kind of keep it flowing, that it still feels like you're following a bit of a story or that there's just something there to watch. Because the other thing I would say is that had it just been on audio, I think it would have been quite a tricky listen.
Mm.
You know, the audio quality is not brilliant with some of the speech, I found. Maybe that was just me watching it kind of through, you know, I mean, it's only available online as a kind of... They are on YouTube as well, I think, but we watched them elsewhere.
I watched them on, you can get them on Daily Motion or whatever, but I watched them on.
I did it through Daily Motion, I don't know, but I found, yeah, the audio quality on its own is not great. I have made a couple of notes through the episode. There's a few bits when there is sort of your classic scuffle and that kind of thing. When otherwise, I think you definitely wouldn't really know what's happening. They have also put up like little captions on it as well for the bits when there isn't any dialogue, just so you can understand a little bit. There's almost like a couple of kind of script notes of like the doctor leaves the room or somebody comes in, or you know, so you've got a vague idea of what's happening. So it is actually really well done. It's definitely not as dry as I thought it was going to be.
I agree. Yeah, I thought it was going to be much more of a slog.
Yeah.
And I was prepared for that. Like we'd talked about this before. Like I think originally we were like, we cannot watch this remotely because it'll be horrible.
Yeah.
Which seems a bit dramatic now that I think about it. I'm like, it was okay. Like, it was fine. I watched them on YouTube, but it was the same adaptation. It was just available on a playlist on YouTube, and I found that easy. But I did try to put on, because you know how on YouTube you can put captions on anything.
Yeah.
And it was so bad. Like, it was obviously not made for it. Like, it was YouTube trying to do it. And it was
sometimes they make it worse. They're more of a distraction because they just start talking absolute gibberish down the box.
It was a fucking mess. And it's annoying for me because when I'm watching them on BritBox, especially those old ones where, it's not just that the audio quality isn't great. It's also that, you know, you've got people stumbling, William Hartnell, stumbling over their lines and talking shite. Yeah. So, like... Yeah.
There's a few of them in that one. It's not just Hartnell in this one, by the way. There's a couple of them have had a stutter.
Yeah. So normally the subtitles, like, I'm just saying, the subtitles are good at the best of times. But yeah, I tried the YouTube ones and I was like, nah, it's a nightmare. I did just remember, I guess another way maybe that people listen to it is maybe just the audio. Or there's probably audio adaptations of some of them, aren't there?
I dare say there is also animated versions of some of them as well, which are on BritBox.
Yeah, but not these ones, yeah.
But I have done, when I guested on Who Can Convince You with Harry, he and I did the Macra Terror ones, and it was the first I have ventured into any of the animated ones, and I loved them, I have to say. I really enjoyed them. They were really well done. Again, like, they're not fully animated like a proper moving cartoon. Again, it's almost just like a sort of comic book kind of vibe to it.
Oh, cool.
Watch them, so it's like it does go through little kind of animated bits, but not a full cartoon as we would know it. But yeah, again, it was a much easier watch than I thought. I think I said that on it, that the result, it was a much more enjoyable experience than I maybe thought, because again, I had it in my head it would be a bit of a slog, and they're not. So
yeah,
for anybody that's maybe, you know, a bit of a Doctor Who fan and hasn't ventured, go venture.
And also, like, honestly, like, bless the people that put these together. It must have been so much work. They do it artistically, and, like, for example, there'll be bits where there's dialogue, and obviously they're changing the images for the people that are speaking the dialogue, but also when it's important to have a reaction shot, even though the person isn't reacting because it's a still, you do get the impression, oh, that character's taking that in. And you know, so it's much more nuanced than I thought it would be.
And what I noticed, which I hadn't thought, I'd assumed it would just be from pictures, which have all been recolorized as well, so it's not even in black and white, so that's quite nice.
Yeah, fun.
A great attention span like myself. But what I've noticed they've done is there's some of them, there's definitely stills that you see the same faces again, and they've photoshopped them together, so it's not a proper shot.
Yeah.
They've actually gone to the effort of putting two or three of the characters into one shot so you can see who's involved in the conversation and stuff.
It is pretty, like, crudely done, but it does the job, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a great Photoshop, but when you think that they're sort of 60s photographs cut from film, which is now missing, which were black and white, which have now been recoloured and then plastered over an audio, I think they've done a bloody good job.
Yeah, it's like, credit where credit's due, guys.
Massively.
And also, and I know we'll get into this more in the episode, but I just want to quickly say, I think particularly for a story like Marco Polo, which features a lot of Asian characters, presumably played by white actors.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying
it's a bit more forgiving that that you don't have the film, I'll be honest.
The accents, however, in the audio cannot be disguised.
We'll get into this.
Leave that till we delve in, but bloody hell.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, of all the ones that had to be lost, like, it's far more palatable that there are only stills and,
Let's leave that in the 60s where
it's
it belongs.
It's nice that it's not, like, it's a bit harder to see the racism. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just saying, it was a good thing. Of all the ones you could lose, it's, like, probably not the worst thing in the world. So, right, so I get into this plot. I'm really just going to do the plot for the whole thing in the quickest way I can. And it's quite quick, I swear. TARDIS is damaged in the Himalayas. There's no heat, there's no light or water. TARDIS is basically fucking useless. They bump into Marco Polo. Oh. And he's like, hey guys, I'm going to help you out. He gives some shelter, and he's got this like big caravan of people with him. You know, he's like, he's traveling. Marco Polo's deal is that he travels around. He tells everything he sees to this emperor. And he's like, you're welcome. So yeah, they help the doctor recover from altitude sickness. I guess the deal at that point is like, hey, we'll look after you until you're feeling better, guys. And then you're on your way. But then Marco Polo's like, ha, psych. I'm going to take the TARDIS to Peking, to the emperor, because I think if I use this as a bargaining chip, he'll let me go home, and I want to go home to Venice. Everyone's furious, obviously. They're kind of stuck with these guys. And yeah, he's like, hey, but you can just build another TARDIS there. And they're like, no, but, you know, they're stuck on the travels of Marco Polo. There's a couple of other people we meet that are going to be important in the story. We've got the warlord Tagana, who's secretly planning to assassinate the emperor, and kind of just generally messes with their plans throughout. And you've got Ping Cho, who's a 16-year-old girl who is on her way to Peking to meet the husband that she's been arranged to marry, and he's like three times her age or something, you know, ridiculous and horrible. So they travel to Peking over a number of episodes. Tagana's kind of trying to sabotage them in various ways on their way, and kind of discredit the team to Marco Polo. And they kind of do stay on friendly terms with Marco Polo, even though they've got disagreements with him on various things. But Tagana's always being like, and also it's quite hard for them to keep Marco Polo's trust because they also keep trying to steal the TARDIS back. So Tagana's like, you can't trust these guys. And then he's like, yeah, I can't. They keep trying to steal the TARDIS when they said they wouldn't. And also Ping Cho is sort of trying to help them because her and Susan have struck up a friendship as well. So, you know, they eventually arrive in Peking at Kublai Khan's palace. The doctor and the emperor kind of initially clash, and then they're like, hey, we're two old guys, we get it, and they get on. The doctor tries to win back the TARDIS in game of backgammon, but he loses. Ian and Ping Cho find out about Tagana's plan to kill the emperor, and they alert Marco Polo, who tracks down Tagana in time, and they fight. Marco Polo disarms Tagana, but before he can be captured and executed, Tagana stabs himself. And then in the end, Marco Polo hands over the key to the doctor voluntarily, and he lets them leave. And I guess we also find out at the end that Ping Cho doesn't have to marry that guy because he dies. I realized how inconsequential Ping Cho was to all of the story when I was writing the plot, and I was like, oh, I better mention Ping Cho because she's in this story so much. She does do lots of little things throughout it, but I was like, in terms of the main plot, she's not that important. That's just an overview of the plot. I remember thinking that there wasn't a lot of action in this story, but I don't know if it was just because of the missing episode nature. I don't know if it's just because there was stills. I think there is, because there's stuff like they get attacked by that group where, you know, where they set the bamboo on fire and make it explode, you know. Yeah. So there's a bit where they're ambushed, and there's obviously the fight at the end. So maybe I'm just not remembering it as that because I don't see any of that action. I don't know.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of sort of backwards and forwards in this.
Well, that's this series, isn't it?
Like, yeah, a little bit. I mean, obviously, the whole point, I mean, it's Marco Polo and he was a traveller, so there is a lot of travelling. It was just sort of like that seemed to be the in-between sort of breakup between scenes. It was like, oh, and then we walked for another 6 days. But this could have been done in like a 2-day time span.
Yeah.
They seemed to drag it out, and I thought, actually, it was only when I was sort of adding it up in my head a little bit, I thought, they've been here for bloody months going through this.
Yeah, like, they were there so long. It is an epic, isn't it?
And also Ian's in the same outfit for the entire thing. No, must have been stinking.
Dirty, yeah.
Dirty Ian.
Do you know what's funny is that I remember doing the Keys of Marinus with Gabriel, and I was like, Ian's in a kimono. Why? Right.
Oh, it all makes sense.
Yeah. And the first note I have in this whole thing is that I was like, oh, I forgot Ian was wearing a cape from the episode before. And it's like Gilbert and Sullivan's cape or something. I can't remember. But yeah, I got like a flashback to like series one podcast. I was like, ah!
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm going to just go through notes from the first episode and feel free to. So a lot of it is about, I guess this is the first one I saw. So I guess a lot of it is just about the format. I was sort of saying, oh, it's kind of okay if you're used to audio dramas and stuff, which I like. So I guess that's another reason I didn't find it very abrasive. Now, I wanted to bring this up because I know you sent me a message maybe earlier today or yesterday just saying Susan is really getting to me in this story. I put Susan's racket is actually quite helpful because...
No.
But, well, it is annoying, but I remember just thinking, oh, this is quite helpful to me right now because I can't see what's happening. But Susan's going, oh my God, this is here, this is here. And I was like, all right, thanks, Susan.
No, stop whinging.
I know.
Shut up, Lassie.
I don't know why they directed her to just be so hysterical.
Yeah, I think this is, I mean, I'm sure I said this way back, probably when we started the pod. Certainly in my head, and my initial memory of sort of watching early Doctor Who's when I was younger, is that there's always sort of a slight tendency to have like lassies in peril, and it was always like the women were there, you know, the assistants were always there to scream. And I know that was a sort of stereotype thing that I know like my dad had picked up on when we watched it when I was younger as well, that it was always the women were there to scream. And when we first started watching, like from the beginning, and I was like, God, I'd forgotten actually, Barbara's really kick-ass. Like, she's really cool. Susan is definitely ticking the boxes for that one for me, certainly in this episode, of just being like unnecessarily hysterical.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, obviously, I mean, it's situations within the story that you go, yeah, okay, frightened, yeah, okay. But for a child of a Time Lord, or grandchild of
well,
a Time
yeah.
Lord, traveled with him for as long as she has, she apparently just has no grip on herself whatsoever.
With the background we have of that character, it literally doesn't really make sense. That's just
no.
that's what's so weird. It's not no. even that she's a woman and that she it's like fine, like but
because
why
Barbara,
her
proof of that of even like in the 60s when this was written, when there definitely was some majors around attitudes to women, like Barbara's pretty kick-ass. Like, she's intelligent, she stands up for herself, she's independent,
she's very resilient,
sensible.
Like, yeah, and often in the face of some perilous scary situations, she can be
yeah.
remarkably dignified and resilient.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, Susan, yeah, I mean, I never felt like I got overly kind of bonded with her character, and I've always said the point of the companions, male, female, alien or otherwise, it's always been that they kind of are there to ask the questions and do the, oh, what's that? Oh, what's happening? So that the Doctor's got somebody to explain stuff to for the benefit of the viewers.
What is good, though, is that you get Susan asking Barbara, and this isn't the first time we've had this, she always refers to Barbara to help her with human history. And this
yeah.
is right up Barbara's alley,
yeah.
isn't it? Because we've
yeah,
got...
Yeah, as teachers. Yeah.
And this is the first episode of Doctor Who that features a real person from history.
Yeah.
This is great. This, you know, this first little bit where Susan says to Barbara, right, yeah, who's that? Though I did not enjoy Ian, like, mansplaining the air.
Yeah, a little bit.
Ian mansplains air. It's so incredible.
Mark mansplains it to Marco Polo and you're like, wait,
it's like, listen, Ian, you may be right, but like for God's sake, read the room. Like,
yeah.
Mark, this man is from the past. Like, he doesn't need you. so annoying.
Now, like, people still vaguely know what his name is. Like, he's obviously done all right for himself.
I could understand it if Susan, someone who's literally an alien, was like, oh, Ian, I do feel dreadfully dizzy.
Yeah.
What's that? What's wrong? And
yeah.
he was like, ah, well, you see, Susan, that'll be altitude sickness. Like, fine.
Yeah, right. yeah.
But he's like, I don't know. He was like, the thing is, Marco Polo, so the air is like this. And it's like.
There's another bit, and I wrote down, and I should have not actually written the exact quote, but the other bit in this sort of first episode that bugged me slightly with Susan is that she says something about, like, oh, they're not like us, or they don't look like us, or something. And it has she never seen an Asian person?
Oh.
My concern, there was a comment in it. I'm really annoyed. I should have written it down.
I don't remember this.
Did it where she says something about, like, oh, they look different from us, or they're not like, and I thought, okay.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, maybe I've read it wrong. I'm gonna. That's
gonna no. You may be right. Yeah, I just can't remember. I guess I did like Susan and Ping Cho. though, because I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, I think she needed another little kind of young character, because sometimes I think we forget that Susan's only meant to be 16 years old.
Mm, yeah, and it was fun. And also it was good because then we really got a sense of, I guess, how horrible Ping Chu's situation was, because
yeah,
we've got, you know, when you see her next to Susan, it's like, oh God, she's Susan's age.
Yeah.
And this is going to, yeah, and this is going to happen to her.
Already working as a sort of servant and set up for a sort of child bride situation with a bloke in his 70s, and you go, oh God.
So yeah. Their friendship was pretty wholesome, and yeah, and it was cool to see.
Nice to give somebody, I think it was almost like it was giving Susan somebody else to bounce off rather than sort of following them about all the time, doing the, what's that, it was giving her like a different little dynamic off to the side somewhere. We broke it up a little bit for her.
Oh yeah, definitely, that was quite refreshing, wasn't it? Yeah, because we don't normally get to see Susan kind of relating to people her own age.
No.
What am I having a look down?
Oh, sorry, go on. Sort of system, even because obviously this is actually quite early in season one, this episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the fourth story, it sort of establishes a theme that I think we see pretty much all the way through the longer stories, or certainly the historical ones, where there's always sort of like they've bumped into a group of people / aliens or whatever, but in this one, people, there's ones that want to protect them, there's ones that want to kill them, and then they spend their whole time kind of playing one off the other.
And that's very true, yeah.
Like all the way through, there's always like a bloodthirsty warrior one and a sort of slightly wiser, more protective one.
It reminded me a lot of the Aztecs.
Exactly the episode I was going to refer to. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly the episode I was going to refer to.
But the difference of the Aztecs was that it all revolved around Barbara. It was all about her kind of journey.
Yeah, I mean, the themes were, you know, obviously the storyline within it is different, but just overall, there's a sort of scaffold for the dynamic. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe that's, I guess, a historical thing. The way they approach historicals. But I thought Marco Polo could have done with... I like the Aztecs a lot better than Marco Polo. And I think the difference is because, well, what I found so engaging about the Aztecs, and it was probably my favourite from series one, was that it was all about Barbara's personal journey. Whereas Marco Polo, there wasn't... You don't have a lot to hang on to, really.
Yeah, we're not far enough on that feels established enough to start giving characters really big hitting things yet.
Well, it could be, the thing is, it could be about anything. Like, there's no reason it even has to be about Marco Polo. The only stakes are that the TARDIS is being stolen and they did it back.
You could have set it anywhere. Yeah. I think even like going back to, I'm trying to think, you know, like even your sort of like going back to your sort of Zarbi type thing as well. Do you know, it was like there was two factions of them, and it was like there were ones that were protective and there was ones that want to have a fight, and then the Doctor and his team go back and forward between them and try and, you know, there's always like a sort of two factions and they jump between the two of them.
Maybe that's a kind of writer's framework that they
always
have.
I definitely think it's a sort of scaffold, but...
Yeah. I do think, like, stakes were maybe a bit of an issue in this one, because also they didn't have any personal stakes within the whole thing. Like, they didn't really care if Marco Polo succeeded or anything. They just wanted the TARDIS. And the minute they got the TARDIS, they were out of there. Like, there was no reason for them to stick around. Not even, like... Ping Chu, because everything with Ping Chu was fine. Like, that guy just died. So, like, do you know what I mean? There was no reason. There wasn't anything they cared about in the story.
No, there's nothing that really anchored it for us.
Well, that's the thing. In the Aztecs, Barbara is so invested in changing this community. It's about that. Even though they can't get back to the TARDIS, it's not really, you know, that's not the only thing at play. Whereas in this story, it was literally just like, oh, we just need them to give us the TARDIS. Like,
just give me the keys back and we'll be off. Yeah, I know what you mean. There wasn't like a pool of anything, really, was there?
No. But it sounds like I hated it. I didn't. It was still like an engaging story. I think, yeah, in terms of historicals, I think the Aztecs did.
The development between here and by the time we get to something like the Aztecs, where they've sort of, you're more invested in your characters and they've been able to put a bit more into them.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it was trying to be more like a sprawling epic. Like the map, I loved the map.
The map in the original, though, was that an aid to...
Oh, I guess I don't know.
If there was any map footage in the original, or I feel like that might just be a graphic that's been added in.
I can't think what they would have instead, though. Just him writing or something. Well, I really enjoyed it in any case. So cute. And the narration is... That's not really something that happens ever. Yeah. So all that was kind of interesting. It was a different kind of episode, definitely. I guess I'm forgetting as well that back in series one, it still is sort of the case, but in series one, really every episode was so different. Like every story, sorry, was so different.
Yeah.
And I can imagine if you'd watched An Unearthly Child, then you'd watch The Daleks, then you watch The Bananas Edge of Destruction, and then you watch, well, you watch Edge of Destruction, two episodes only in the TARDIS, where nothing makes sense. And then you watch something, a sprawling month-long journey, like months-long journey.
It's a hell of a ride, isn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Touched on just about everything you could possibly want to do with a man in a space and time machine. Like, they've gone absolutely all out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but notes I made, I did write down as well how much I enjoyed the sort of Marco Polo POV. You know, it was narrated by somebody else for a little bit.
Yeah, and it does mean that even though he kind of is the adversary to the team, right? But I think because he's narrating it, you never quite see him as a villain. You see his side, don't you?
He does give them a bit of leeway, where obviously, like, your main villain, you know, the one trying to kill them and the warrior.
T'Ganna, yeah. Like when he pours out the water and he goes, he's something like, "Here's your water, Marco Polo." And you're like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, Marco Polo is a tricky one because you sort of want him to be the goody, but he's kind of not. But then he's actually got a reason for it, that he's trying to, you know, he wants to go home as well. And there's a nice
Get his point of view. Yeah, like
they all actually just want to go home and they're all using each other to try and get there kind of thing. Yeah. It's quite cleverly done.
Yeah, and I think the narration probably does help that. There was just one very funny thing that I found in this episode, and it was to do with this. I was still kind of getting used to the stills, you know. You know when the Doctor gets, like, this bad news that Marco Polo isn't going to give him back his TARDIS, and the Doctor just starts laughing. You know, he's in hysterics.
Yeah.
And there's just a still on Ian's face, and he is just staring into the void. And you can... And you can just imagine that that would be his real face, you know, like the Doctor's just laughing hysterically at this quite grim situation. And Ian's just like, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." It's really, really funny.
They keep showing us clip as well of Barbara looking like she's just sat on something wet as well. You know, there's one still, not Barbara, Susan.
Yes, yes, I know exactly the one you mean. And we need to share it on the socials because I was dying. Yeah, it's so funny. Her face is like this. Wait, you can see me. It's sort of like this.
It's the face of someone who's just sat in something wet by mistake. It's like...
It's so funny. It's so funny. Yeah, I knew you would notice that as well. I was like, she's going to die at that face. Yeah, and they just keep bringing it out whenever she's like a bit concerned about something.
There's some of the ones for the time they're in the caves episodes when they sort of crop at it in when it's not even appropriate. To the point that it's obviously her meant to be looking scared, but it's sort of like somebody's just let rip and she's terrified. Like it's just...
Oh, it's so funny.
And the more you've tuned into it, the more it pops up, I think. And then you're like, oh no, it's just... Yeah, the stills are fun. Yeah, episode one. Do you not think the Doctor's a proper grumpy git in this?
Oh,
you know we've gone over it before that he's quite stroppy, but then I'm forgetting we're still really early on in his character at this point.
I don't know if I'm noticing it more in this one, because the thing is, it's like you say, whenever anything kind of kicks off, because you've just got the stills, it's so weird. You're just like, what's going on? Like, so there was like a couple of times, I don't really remember if it was episode one, but maybe it probably was, I suppose, where he just starts kicking off about the TARDIS, and he's just yelling, and everyone's yelling, and Susan's screaming, and you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, quite early on in this episode, he just seems to be telling everybody to like stop that, go away, shut up. He just seems really, really cross.
I think we've forgotten how much he's softened, even just between season one and season two, because obviously we talked about all this in An Unearthly Child, of course. And it is only, I mean, think about it. Right now, Barbara and Ian are still kind of his, like, captives, you know?
Yeah.
They
are a bit.
So, yeah, I think it's just maybe a bit jarring for us to go back, and it's like,
definitely one of these characters that you think, oh gosh, I know we grow to love him, and there's a real affection for the, like, soft old man moments, but yeah, just for a moment. I also, you know, I like to bring up a sassy doctor, because I feel like particularly one has sassy doctor moments, is at one point, somebody sort of insults him and he starts to yawn. I don't know. And again,
yes.
there's a total yawn there, and then he starts getting all, oh, rather bloodthirsty for a man of God, and you're like, hold on a wee minute, you've gone from grumpy to absolute sassbag here.
I wrote, and I don't remember, I only didn't mention it because I couldn't remember what bit it was, but I think it must have been when he yawned. I went, oh God, the doctor got as bored of the history as I did. It was like, there was a bit where someone was like, maybe Marco Polo was just like giving a bit of a history lesson. And he was just like, oh, and I was like, same, like, let's get moving.
Yeah, I definitely just thought for the most of this episode, because he then obviously, as I say, starts off very, very kind of grouchy and snappy with everybody, and then starts getting a little bit sassy. And then, as I say, towards the end, when he's doing like the proper manic laughing, and Ian's like horrified by him, he's just quite an uncomfortable character in this episode so far, I think.
Yeah, we still don't have a handle of him at this point. Yeah,
no,
they're still kind of explaining who he is a bit. Episode two, they're still kind of on the road. This is when like the sandstorm happens. Oh my God, can we talk about the sandstorm effects?
God, do we have to?
Oh, it was so cute. It's so cute. Like they just have the stills and have put kind of like snow over the top.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's so good. I'm like, guys, you didn't even have to do that, you know? Like, no. Bless you.
No. Oh, extra.
It's so funny. Like, you're like, oh, thank you. There's so much chaos in this one, isn't there?
Episode. I quite like this one.
Yeah, me too.
Start off with Barbara seems to be sort of keeping everybody together as per bloody usual and just being like, right, this is what's happening.
Mm.
What we're doing. This is the plan. We'll fix the TARDIS. We've got, and she just seems to be sort of keeping everybody's shit together as usual. Ian is slightly too casual at the start of this episode, having just been sort of captured and told they're not allowed to go home. Ian appears to be playing chess.
Oh, yeah, he's just chilling out. Yeah.
And she's not helping at all.
Do you remember when they said, it means the king's dead, and they meant the king in chess, and there was a big cymbal crash?
It was like they had the orchestra over the back of the actual recording. That, no, the chess one, guys. Not the real one. Settle down. They're like, oh, sorry.
Not yet. Yeah, there's a lot of chaos in this, because there's sandstorm, so there's lots of screaming and like wind and them trying to...
Anybody that goes along and watches it off the back of this, the sandstorm audio without, and a particular, not so much the actual sandstorm audio, but the bit before it, in that Susan and Ping Cho decide to go for a walk.
Yeah.
Right before the sandstorm. And
oh,
they go,
that's all really cute, that stuff, by the way, where they're like... Really,
the audio of the two of them hiking up a mountain is not good. It's not good.
Oh, did you think it sounded quite suggestive?
Yes. Put it this way, having been sitting in here watching this, in my house where there are other people, I did feel the need to turn it down because I thought they're going to think I'm watching something other than sci-fi in here. Bloody hell.
Oh, boy.
I mean, I'm going to leave it up to people's imaginations, or, you know, go listen to it for yourself. But
yeah,
just turn that down when you get to that bit, because honestly, your neighbours will think you're up to something far worse than sci-fi.
I remember you mentioned, yeah, there's sometimes you get some captions that are usually very useful. And they're like, Tagana nods to the doctor and leaves the tent. And you're like, great.
Yeah, they're almost like just stage directions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a perfect example. But sometimes they're not there. And you're like, only occasionally. But like, I've got a bit in this episode where I'm like, why did they draw their swords? Like, you hear that they do and they say something about it. And I'm like, why did they have their swords out? And I just don't know why. Like, it was, but I think I just couldn't hear what the hell they were talking about. It was just a bit where the audio was a bit shit.
I know what you
shit.
Mean. Some of it that you find yourself going, "What? Sorry, what was the need for that? I've missed what's just, I don't know what the purpose of that was."
But I also liked this one as well. Yeah, like the stakes were pretty high, weren't they? Because they were, oh, I was having flashbacks to working in the heat wave this summer. My God. You know, when they were wandering along in the desert and
rationing their water.
And then, you know, oh, when he sabotaged the water. Great stuff, yeah.
Again, there's a bit here that I've maybe missed, and I am open to somebody filling in the gaps in my brain because I'm maybe just zoned out. Tagana goes to poison the water, and there's the bit when he goes to somebody else and he gets the little vial of poison.
Yeah.
What, does that come back into play at any point? Because he seems to just drain all the water all over the floor and then leave it.
Oh, yeah, I don't know, man.
Anything else in the story, do they?
Sorry, say that again?
There is no poisoning in the story at any point, is there?
No, I don't think so. I think you're right. I think it's something he was...
I'm not been a complete brain fart there.
No, I remember him getting the vial also and being like,
he
I'm gonna poison
some sort of poison or toxin or something. Not just me. Okay, thank you.
No, I don't know, but yeah, I had the same question. Episode 3-8, right? I loved the way this started when they realized that there was condensation on the walls of the TARDIS. They go into series one, let's educate the kids mode. Oh, I love it. And Ian's like, this is what we call condensation. And they were going on and on about it.
Oh my God.
That's so lovely. It's so wholesome, you know, it's so pure.
Yeah, nice. So my notes in this are going, how have people never encountered condensation?
No, no, but they knew what, but they just didn't know the word was condensation.
It's the way they're like, no, no, but when there's heat outside and then it's like it's hotter inside than it is outside, then and I'm like, you're never telling me that nobody on the planet in somewhere in Asia has never come across condensation.
Yeah. Right. Can I tell you how I learned the word condensation?
Feel free. I love that you know this.
No, I do. I do because because as you know, I play the trumpet, and and when I started learning the trumpet, I learned that you need to open a little valve and blow out water. And I remember my trumpet teacher would say, now, people are going to say to you that that's you emptying your spit, but it's not spit. It's condensation from the hot air of your breath on the cold trumpet makes condensation. And I was like, all right. And right enough, I started in the school wind band, like the cool kid I was. Yeah. And everyone would be like, you're emptying the spit out your trumpet. And I'd be like, actually, it's condensation. But also, the condensation was made from the air that came out my mouth, the moisture that came out my mouth. So it kind of is just spit, isn't it?
Don't write in.
Like, it's like I'm splitting hairs.
You are a condensation expert on Twitter. Please don't write in.
It's like I'm splitting hairs, though, aren't I? To be like, it's not my spit, it's condensation. Like,
just because you wanted to say that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I can still that.
But I great delight in being like, it actually, it's not spit, it's condensation. Yeah. Shut up.
It is textbook you.
Yeah. Awful. Really enjoyed. Barbara is so good. She is ahead of the game with Tigana. Did you notice the way that she, do you remember when Tigana, so do you mind Tigana was like, yeah, there was a lot of bandits last night and I guess they got rid of the water. And Barbara goes, oh, really? Like, how many bandits?
None of your shit.
She says it so sarcastic. Oh, bandits. Really? And I could only tell from the audio how sarcastic she was. Like, how...
Yeah, you can just picture her face, can't you?
I could hear her tone. I didn't need the visual. I was like, Barbara fucking knows. She always knows. Yeah, she's good.
The other bit I really annoyed is... It's one point when they're talking about areas and they're mapping out like part of, and there's another bit again when you can just hear the sarcasm where they name somewhere on the map and I forget where it is, and she goes, oh, that used to be in the north, and it's either Marco or Ian, but somebody in the background goes, still is Barbara.
You're like, yes,
that used to be in the north, but it still is Barbara.
You're right. I don't remember who it is. Yeah, it's you're right. It's
initially I thought it was Ian, but I think it's Marco Polo. It's like, still is Barbara.
Yeah, he's like, what the hell are you saying? Yeah, that's like a faux pas from a faux pas from Barbara, where she forgets that she's from the future. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good.
I remember this is the one where there's the big story from Ping Zhou in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and it goes on and on and on. Do you know what, though? I didn't even mind it. Like, I was like, all right. But I was like, but this is padding, though. I think I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it because I have all of Marco Polo at my disposal. And I'm like, well, after this episode finishes, I'll watch another one. If I was watching this every week and I only got Doctor Who...
That was your 25 minutes of the week, wasn't it?
I'd be livid. Yeah, if I was like, this is the Doctor Who I'm getting this week, is Ping Zhou telling this long story. Like, yeah, I'd be furious.
Oh, I think my notes for this episode are my favourite.
Okay, go on.
There's bits of it now that I'm like, what was I drivelling about? But again, my sassy doctor of the week is the bit when he turns to somebody and says, I'm assuming it's Tigana. I should really make note of these conversations in more detail. But he turns and goes, I think you're forgetting that you are speaking to a man of superior intellect.
Yeah, Tagana doesn't care.
Care. You're speaking to a man of superior intellect. I'm like, wow. Right. I guess comparing that to modern Who, where the Doctor kind of plays himself down and he's like, oh, you know, nobody's unimportant. Everybody, I've never met someone who wasn't important. Cut to First Doctor, who's like, listen, you thick shits. I'm brighter than you and I'm having none of it. Like,
I'm a goddamn genius. Sit down and shut up.
I mean, he's come a long way. He's come a long way, but I'm sort of enjoying him. The weed references.
Wait, what?
The weed references.
When does this happen? Remind me.
But they all start talking about hash in various formats. And I did just end up writing, wait, weed?
I don't remember. But I've also written, I feel like I'm missing some exposition here. Because of all the music, it was so hard to hear. So is this what happened? Right. You remind me then. Why does this come up?
Right, I'm going to have to go back and double check the episode now because I definitely got a bit lost in translation. But the names of the people they're talking about in the cave, and there's various caves mentioned as well in all the storytelling, like you say, padding. They start talking about the names of the people.
Oh.
And there's definitely something that comes around the trading of hash.
Oh, really?
And I kind of...
Maybe I zoned out at this point. I'm so sorry.
Quite a lot of wordy meandering in this episode. I kind of let it slide because I was like, no, I need to listen. I can't keep rewinding this. I need to listen to work out where all these caves are coming into play.
I can't remember a lot about the caves other than them all debating about whether the eyes are moving. Obviously, Barbara and Ian had a lovely little cuddle when Barbara thought she was going to die. And how it was pretty inconsequential, apparently, that Barbara got kidnapped by some bandits. Like, they're just like, oh, I guess we'll never know. Even then, everyone was like, we're pretty sure that Tagana, like, arranged for Barbara to be kidnapped and nearly killed. And he's like, oh, I guess we'll never know. And then even then, Ping Cho was like, hey, like, I figured out a way for... But then this is what's kind of good about it, is that this is the thing, especially, I think, more into the next episode, but Tagana, and it's really like Tagana's loyalties versus Team TARDIS. And for Marco Polo, like, there were some times I was like, Marco, come on. Like, you really don't think Tagana's a bad guy. But then, like, in his defense, why should he trust? He has some great conversations with Ian. He's like, why should I trust you when you keep betraying my trust by trying to get the TARDIS back? And Ian's like, I can't explain. He's trying to basically say to him, look, we are good, but we're going to try at every turn to betray you and get the TARDIS back. So, and to get, you know, they don't know who these people are.
It's a tricky one because it's like, I can see why they do it, but I feel like they go back to it a little bit every episode to the point it maybe gets a little bit repetitive.
Okay, sure. I quite liked, I quite liked a lot of that stuff, like about the different alliances of people and why they should trust each other and stuff. It was fun.
It just, again, seemed to kind of bounce back and forward quite a lot.
They were definitely padding it out as well, though, as they always did.
One thing I do absolutely want to point out, just on a positive note, is the images, and again, obviously taken from actual footage, is when Ping Cho is doing her little storytelling bit, shots are Susan, and she's sitting on the Doctor's knee, or kind of sitting under his lap, and he's like holding on to her.
Oh, they look so sweet, yeah.
They're really, really sweet, and it's the first time I think that I've sort of got the grandfatherly kind of affection from the relationship. I know she calls him grandfather, but up until then there hasn't been an awful lot of a kind of family vibe to them.
Yeah, there's a paternal
after I've seen the moving footage of that, because it's really lovely. She's like sitting at his feet, kind of between his legs, and he's kind of, it's obviously she's too big to be like on his knee, because she'd have killed him, he was a little man, but yeah, it was just really nice. It was just a really sweet little kind of affectionate moment where she's like sitting on his knee for story time, and you're like, oh. And then you forget she was meant to be a wee lassie.
And especially because we don't see that relationship since that Doctor.
Oh, nah, not really. That's the thing. You don't see an awful lot of grandfather. Like the Susan in the movies with the Peter Cushing Doctor is a younger girl. So like, you know, she actually is played by a little girl.
Oh, really? Right, okay.
Yeah, so you do get more of that, like, because she is an actual child and the actress is an actual child and not Caroline Ford being 16.
Episode 4, I've got a lot of good notes from. I think I must... Sorry, I sound confused about what I enjoyed and didn't, but it's only because I did watch it a few days ago now. Like, today is Monday and I watched it on Thursday. So I'm like, I must have enjoyed this one. Now I'm remembering it, I really did. It's the one... I think the second half of the episode is, you know, Marco Polo's been listening. So it's been this kind of push and pull of, like, Team TARDIS being like, listen, we think Tegana's bad news, man. Like, yeah. We think he kidnapped Barbara. This is fucking bullshit. And Tegana being like, these guys keep liars. Trying to steal their TARDIS. Them. Like, you know, liars. You should trust me, Tegana. And eventually Marco Polo's like, I'm going to put you in your own separate... Remember, he, like, puts them in their own separate tent. He's like, go over there. And then ultimately they discover that an ambush is going to take place. Oh wait, no, this happens across two episodes, doesn't it? But I like this whole section. Yeah, they're like near a forest sort of, and they realize there's going to be an ambush, and they're like, we've got to let Marco Polo know, but Marco Polo's mad with us. And that's when they use the bamboo.
I really jumped a whole episode, mate.
No, I'm sorry, I know that. I just wanted to say I liked this kind of section.
From here on in, you're involved. Okay.
Yeah, this section of it. This whole bit where they were in their own little tent and then they had to kind of get back into Marco Polo's good graces. But yeah, episode 4, I think, from what I remember, was a lot about who was trusting who and whose alliances.
Yeah.
Also, Ian was wearing some amazing red boots.
Yes. Yeah, which... and looking like some sort of like Asian Peter Pan crossover. An absolute dream. Yeah, I made a note weirdly as well, where it's always feel like, particularly in the longer kind of episodes that are sort of 7 or 8 sections, I always feel like the sort of episode 4, there's some real plot kicks off by that point. Mm. It kind of crescendos a little bit somewhere at this midpoint.
I think you're probably right,
Sort of from the end of, like the end of episode 3, like they've had the cave and it ends with Susan screaming like a bloody banshee again, no apparent reason.
A guttural scream, yeah.
Oh, God. But yeah, because sort of towards the end of that one, I had put down like Doctor's back on form, and then the fact that they start referring to him as the Old Lord, which is exceptional. And then my final thought for episode 3 was, "Oh, Susan, shut up."
Yeah.
And then episode 4 opens with the Doctor telling her to shut up. So I started enjoying it from there on in, really. My only sort of slight naff bit with the cave, I mean, it's really well painted and stuff from the scenery that they've got, but it is a very slab-sided cave. Very, very flat, very sort of MDF looking.
Yeah.
You know, and again, even without the visuals, you can still hear, it's my ongoing thing of the studio recording. It's very studio, the audio echo, and the foot shuffling is back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they all start scuffling about in a cave and it's back to that like gym rubbers on a gym hall floor thing.
And it's even more obvious when you don't have the visual.
Yeah, and I think because it's one of these things that every time we've reviewed one of these, I seem to find it because it just bugs me, and now sort of tuned into it, I've just started making it like a feature.
Admittedly, actually, I think it didn't bother me as much because I didn't have the visual, because it was more like an audio drama.
Maybe, yeah, maybe because there wasn't as much movement and maybe sounded more like a play. Yeah, but I definitely feel like this, it starts picking up, and I feel like the Doctor starts to get back on form because he'd been a bit absent for the first few.
Mm.
Sickness and his altitude sickness, and you know, struggling without the water, and kind of they almost put him on the back seat for a couple of episodes, and they had Ian and Susan doing a lot of the footwork.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like this episode, he's kind of in the cave, he's done the rescue, they've got Barbara back, he's started getting a bit vocal again, and you're like, right, here we go. Oddly though, and this is maybe, I quite like comparing sort of new and old Doctor Who kind of cliches, he missed the details of the eyes. You know, when they're all going, the eyes are moving, and he's like, shut up, no, it's not. And they go, no, no. And then Ian spots it, and he's like, no, no, the eyes are moving. And he's like, no, they're not. No, I would have seen it. It's almost flipped now in modern Doctor Who that the Doctor's the one that notices everything. And, you know, he notices what humans don't. And it's like, he's always going like, keep up, and my brain's working faster than yours. And where with this, it's the other way around, where he's like the wee doddery old man that hasn't noticed.
Yeah, it's just such a different dynamic, isn't it? Because I guess...
Isn't it?
I guess their priority at this point is that they're trying to show that actually he kind of needs Ian and Barbara, and they aren't a nuisance. Yeah. And so that's what they're trying to establish at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I just thought that was interesting that they've kind of flipped that narrative now. Although, you know, there was me saying at the beginning that he's sitting there telling everybody he's a man of superior intelligence.
But he doesn't, but he can he see that they're not painted on eyes?
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
I don't know. I'm just, yeah, I guess it all comes back to that, you know, this is still really early days for the Doctor. And they are very much, you know, on a different wavelength from where he's got to down the line, all the way down to then become, you know, Jodie's Doctor.
She can tell where they are in the world by eating the mud. So
yeah, that's it, you know, when they get to the sort of licking things and yeah, just fun. Yeah. I guess also he's not actually even got a screwdriver by this point either. No. We're still missing Sonic.
He's got bog all, yeah.
Which again, I think I said in the episode I did with Harry as well, for the Macra one, we're going, there's so many locked doors and caves and cages and all sorts in those episodes that you're just going, the Sonic solved a lot of these problems and took away a lot of their plot lines. It's like, oh no, I'm trapped, never mind, we'll just open doors.
Yeah, I know, I think that's why a lot of people don't like the Sonic, eh? Because it makes life too easy, kind of.
On the other hand, it maybe stops you getting stuck in those really boring plot lines of like, oh, we're trapped again. Oh, yeah. We're locked in another cave. Oh.
I would be interested to see what it would be like if they went hands-free again, though.
Yeah, but then I guess we've done a few episodes where the Sonic's been broken and stuff in recent ones. Yeah.
Funny how often they have to say the TARDIS is broken or the Sonic is broken.
Yeah, because otherwise they are just a get out of jail free card, aren't they?
Yeah.
Literally.
Is this the episode where Ian throws a plate?
Yes.
Oh, amazing.
Again, it's in my notes that the juxtaposition between this one and the Aztecs when it was Barbara launching goblets around the gaff.
But that was my first thought was, oh, Ian gets to throw a plate. It's normally Barbara that gets to chuck stuff. But also, what's funny is it had a caption for it. So it was like, Ian throws a plate to the floor. And I was like, yeah. And I howled. I was like, that's so fucking funny that they needed to caption it. And then I realized it's because it's got a point. Like,
he then goes on to use the sharp bits. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's so like to get out of the tent. But it's just there was just a smash and then a. Yeah, and it's just that they it's so funny because they need a reason for him to break the plate. You know what's so stupid is all they had to do was make him realize, oh, I could use a shard of this plate, I'll break it. But instead, at the start of the episode, they just have him be really pissed off that they're captured. And he's just like, yeah, and throws a plate out just because he's mad.
Yeah. I like the way as well that it's like he doesn't just go, oh, I could use this to make my way through the canvas. He goes, I'll cut my way out. And I'm like, right. Because I thought it was a way to go slashing people. And I was like, this is not my Ian.
This is what happens.
Slashing people with bits of plates. Oh, no, he's using it on the canvas of a tent. It's fine. We're fine. He's just being inventive.
This is what happens when we don't have the visual.
Ian was a way out chipping people. I was like, Jesus. What's going on?
Ian says the darndest things, and he says them in his such like jolly Englishman way that in the next episode with the bamboo, he was like, use this bamboo. And I was like, Ian.
He's such a little like Bear Grylls of a man, isn't he?
He cracks me up. He's
who in their right mind knows that bamboo is explosive?
He's a chemistry teacher. He's a chemistry.
I know, but at no point in any of my chemistry lessons was I blowing up bamboo.
Oh, I want to blow up some bamboo so much. Like when I saw that happen, well, I didn't see it happen, as you know, but I heard it. I was like, oh, I want to explode some bamboo. That sounds amazing. But sorry, just quickly going back to episode 4. I like the cliffhanger. It was a rare good one.
Yes.
Where the guard is already dead. So they go to their guard and he's already dead. And they're like, I think they were going to warn him or something, or incapacitate him. I don't know which. And he's already dead.
Yeah, I think Ian was going to go and just knock him out.
He loves doing that, yeah.
Stab him with a plate charge, but he was going to go knock him out so that they could sneak off for their one of their many escape attempts.
And he's already dead.
Already dead.
Yeah, and that was really quite like.
And they do have a really good still of that when they flipped him over, like he kind of tips him off his seat, thinking he's about to come out. and they've got the shot of him just lying there, and it ends on it, and it's like the shot out of the shower scene in Psycho. It's brilliant.
And that was genuinely a good cliffhanger. And it wasn't one that they could easily explain away within the first 30 seconds.
No, it wasn't
going
to be one of those ones, because I've ranted many a time about my disappointing cliffhangers that are always written off within the first 30 seconds. Of like, just kidding, it was all a dream.
Speaking of cliffhangers, that's all we've got time for this episode. But join us next time for Marco Polo Part 2. My Adventure in Space and Time is hosted and produced by Shona Stevenson, with music by Shona Stevenson and artwork by Robbie Stevenson. Special thanks to Carolyn Donald for all her support and to anyone listening. You can hear more on the website at myadventureinspace.wixsite.com/podcast or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. Please join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram at myadventurepod. Thanks for coming along on the adventure.
Before I go, I just want to tell you, you were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.